Welcome to episode 10 of the Service Course Report. I think our teeth are clean and everything is, we've been practicing for like 2 hours. So,
yes,
here we go. This is the special pre-Bovine Classic edition where we talk about the upcoming Bovine Classic in Atascadero, California. We'll classify that as true, real Central California. Santa Barbara, where we're all from, you know, some debate whether that's Central or Southern California.
Right.
Conception might be the dividing line. So we're going to be up there this weekend. And so we thought we would chat about the event, talk about some early experiences off-road that we had that we probably parlay into this weekend. So here we are.
Yeah. And I will add, today is the 21st of October, 2025. Yes. For those of you that are listening and are not taking full advantage of the video that is offered on some of the platforms such as YouTube or Spotify, some just listen, right? I'm one of those people most of the time.
I admit I am too. Yeah. Mostly like to listen, but all right. So what do we got up top, Ed?
Who are we and what is our history with gravel bikes and, how does that apply to this weekend?
All right. KS, you want
to
start?
Yeah, I was thinking back to it. I was like, right, this whole thing, when you think about when mountain bikes started coming out and it was like the mountain bikers and the roadies, and now we got gravel bikes and all of this. And I mean, ultimately, we all ride bikes, but we look back at like what we were doing. And, you know, we got mountain bikes when we were in high school. So what, in the early 80s? And, but we were also racing road bikes. And with that, you know, we raced cyclocross in the winter, but there weren't really any proper cross bikes. So we oftentimes took old road frames. Our buddy Tony Vincente, who was handy with a welder, made a career out of making sculptures and furniture and all sorts of stuff. He also would weld cantilever brazons on old road frames for us because we're like, well, we need a little bit more clearance there. And then we'd head out on these epic rides, like not on a mountain bike, but not on a road bike. And, you know, so I'm thinking we were on gravel bikes back in the day. I mean, it was fun. Early gravel ride on these just makeshift bikes. We would, you know, keep our old parts or stuff you'd win at races, or we'd, you know, haggle with each other to get these things built up. And, it was a lot of fun. And even back then, our friends, you know, the big S Specialized, they had because it was a skinny off-road tire, the Tri-Cross. It was a cross tire, a clincher. Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit before. I mean, so you had one tire you could ride. You pumped them up really, really hard so you wouldn't get a flat, so you would just rattle yourself going on these rides. But, yeah, we had tons of great adventures, right? We were doing that stuff. Yeah. We had our makeshift, our cross-slash-gravel course at Modoc and State. We had the Moore Mesa, you know, dirt criterium, we called it. You know, these short track cross country got nothing on us. We were doing dirt criteriums in the 80s. But, I mean, ultimately, it's like it was all gravel bikes. What do you guys remember about that time?
What about you, Ed?
Well, I was just thinking about how some of the bikes got handed down. Like, I had a cross bike that had Tony Vincente welded cantilevers on it that came from you, Kurt. So you had it first. And I believe Tony was the welder of the cantilevers. And I remember taking that bike to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado for my winter bike, and the coaches, I had a Polish coach, Walter Gubluski or something like that, and Walter's like, "That's not your regular bike, right?" You know, like, no, don't worry, I just brought it out here so I could ride cross, because you know they would make us ride cross,
snowy cross, which
was unbelievable, and involved frozen creeks and the coaches lining up to watch who was going to crack the ice on the frozen creek, you know. But anyway, I that bike was very crude. I mean, it probably had like for a seat clamp, it probably had like something that you tightened with crescent wrenches, you know, like there was no Allen key at the seat clamp.
Right.
But you know, it I think I might have been the second or third person to ride that bike, and I got some use out of it. And I think when I think back of the brazing that was going on in the forks, there was actually holes in the tubing where you know, the brazing had been a little hot and you could see into the tubing.
Oh, really? like a vent hole, but an actual hole.
but you know, it might have been a very helpful vent hole because you were describing how hot some of those tubes could get when you were, because they're very thin wall, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you're brazing, not with official capacity, you could really overheat those tubes. You know, later on, our bikes all got better. You know, Kurt was early with his Elan, which was a true spectacular cross bike. And I had a Bruce Gordon with one single chain ring. I think it had Sugino chain guards on either side of it to make it like to keep the chain from dropping.
Yeah.
And those were probably BMX cranks, to be honest with you. BMX cranks with Sugino guards. I think Tony also ground down chainring teeth to make it a true guard.
Oh, right. Just took like a chainring and cut the teeth off and bolted it on. Yeah. Weren't even making the guards maybe back then.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, and then definitely the Tricost tire plays a real important role. I mean, you know, probably the elites were racing sew-ups, but the Tricross, you know, we went through a lot of tubes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you were talking about, I don't know if you mentioned some of those rides like on Camino Cielo, West Camino Cielo.
Oh, that one.
But the funny thing is that maybe 10 years later in the 90s, early 90s, like let's just say 1990, 7-Eleven started having their team camps there. And those guys snuck away from the coaches on their fancy Eddie Merckx and went out, did some of the, they rode Romero. And we have some photos of them that Alex Sita has sent to us that show, you know, where they were riding their Eddie Merckx and they weren't supposed to. So the spirit of exploring on a cross bike definitely lived on for a long time in Santa Barbara and still does to this day. I mean, I follow certain people like that guy, forget his name on Strava, who does his amazing rides in Santa Barbara on cross bikes.
CJ?
CJ, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's definitely gets out there and does a lot of long riding. Well, you talk about these big rides on Camino Cielo. The first ride that I remember of being like, you know, one of those big gravel rides I had, I think it was my original Falcon road bike that we had in Hull. And I think that we talked about those before in one of the previous episodes. So it didn't have cantilevers on it, had the big, you know, rim brakes on there. And I can remember I got some type of tire. It wasn't like a full cross tire, but it was a tire that was bigger than the normal tire, but I didn't consider that if you just put a normal size road tube in there, that when you filled it up, they would stretch out really thin. So I must have flatted like four times. Once we, you know, in Santa Barbara, we met up. I remember this one ride I met up. It was Kurt. It was you and I and Tom Hodges and Bob Meeker. And, you know, and I was probably 13 or 14 at the time, the youngest of all of us, clips and straps, you know, Nike tennis shoes. I can remember these one Nikes that I used to wear and doing that ride and climbing up, you know, San Marcos Pass, then you go out West Camino pavement, and then you drop to dirt. And I flatted so many times and I had a patch kit and you're like out there pulling the tube and the dirt and patching, scuffing it up with the sandpaper and doing all that. But got all the way across and down Refugio and back down the coast. And it was one of the longest rides, you know, I had ever done. But it was so much fun, so adventurous, you know, and those old bikes. I mean, that was probably a steel-rimmed bike that I had. I later started, you know, like all of us did, we started getting a little bit better road bike and getting the cantilevers put on. But I definitely, you know, with us growing up racing BMX and racing dirt bikes, I think we definitely threw it in a little hotter on our cross bikes than a lot of people did. And I just had a series of getting bikes made and welded up, and then I'd be out ripping and stuff the front end on something and burt would bend the down tube or top tube. I mean, I must have gone through three of those to much chagrin until I finally ponied up and got this. My first actual cross bike was a brand called ATP Plasma, and I can remember the thing was all red. It had a steel fork with like a welded crown, you know, not a round crown, so it had a lot of space out there, and it had like relaxed geometry. And I remember riding it just around, I'm like, God, this thing feels kind of weird, you know. I didn't even know enough about geometry to know that it was like more fork rake and all this. But as soon as I actually got out on the dirt and went fast on it, I was like, oh yeah, this thing can, you know, can move. It was really good handling. So that was my, you know, my first legitimate cross bike. We raced, all of us, I think, raced, you know, different cross races. We raced the cross nationals. I did one up in Scotts Valley my last year as a junior. And yeah, so it was just a lot of fun and doing rides out here and in the hills of Santa Barbara and riding up on our cross bikes. That was a great time.
Was that plasma related to Redline, who obviously went and leaned heavy into cross during
this crop? Don't think it was, because Redline, you know, it didn't have anything on there that said Redline. I can even remember the logo, ATP Plasma, and it was like yellow, but instead of like being one thick letter, it was like three lines, you know, kind of like pinstriped ATP Plasma. It was somewhere up in Oregon, I believe. I bought it, you know, found out about, I don't know, probably read an ad in a magazine, called them up and ordered one. So I ended up selling that to somebody at some point, but that was a good bike.
Well, I definitely think we'll do a cyclocross-centric episode going forward. But, I mean, those bikes, they were gravel bikes. I mean, or they were cross bikes. It was whatever terrain you were riding on, right? And you look at the, like, our modern-day bikes now that are just so much more capable than anything we rode back then, and even the mountain bikes we had back then, right? Because we had mountain bikes, too. And the bikes we'll be riding this weekend are just, you know, leaps and bounds above those early bikes we had. But, you know, we learned a lot riding them, and it was so much fun, right? Oh, it was just about getting out and exploring, like us, right? You freedom. fill your fanny pack full of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and and go riding all day to try to get back by dark.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, yeah. Had to make your own food before there were actual energy bars that you could neatly stick in your pocket. Yeah, going out and doing those rides. I can remember one of the first things I remembered about cross bikes that amazed me is, you know, from having ridden mountain bikes and ridden dirt bikes and used to like a big fat tire with some big knobs on it. I remember when I first got on them and rode like with a specialized tri-cross tire in there, I couldn't believe how well it handled on dirt. Like that small of a tire, like really what it was capable on dirt, but yet it still rolled unbelievably fast, you know, which I guess is, you know, still a feature of today's gravel riding, right? Something that handles good on the dirt, but then still rolls fast. But I still am kind of blown away by that. When I talk to people who are maybe just road cyclists and they're thinking about, you know, riding gravel bike or getting into it, and I tell them like, you can't believe how well, you know, the tires handle, a 40, even a 35. Like if you're not used to it, you're surprised at how well they go on dirt. So that was a fun part of that.
Well, the only problem is we didn't have gearing. That was the big factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned you were riding toeclips and straps with those Nikes. I bet they were those Nike Lava Domes. Was that the shoe?
Actually, they weren't the Lava Domes. They were just a normal pair, only because I think on the Lava Domes, I think that the sole was so thick that with my big mallet feet, it wouldn't have fit in the clip and strap. It would have been like too tall or something.
I just remember that shoe was a good like toe clip strap shoe to ride because the sole was so stiff you didn't feel the pedal quills, you know, versus like a cleated shoe. Like sometimes we'd go or we know we were going to be hiking a lot and you wouldn't want to take your, say your seedy cross shoe or whatever, right? Like we had a shoe with a cleat on it, so we would use those and hiking on them.
Yeah, the Nike tennis shoes were terrible. I mean, they were so flexible for riding. Now, I did later on, I was trying to think what year, because I believe I had them up to the Olympic training site. So it would have been maybe like 84-ish, 85. I bought a pair of Lecoq Sportif touring shoes. I remember they were blue, dark blue with like nylon, and they had a sole that was, I would say, halfway between a normal shoe and those Lava Domes you were talking about, Cass, where it was a little bit thicker, like stiffer, but not so much that it was cumbersome and it you know, because it was a flat-soled shoe. It didn't have obviously a spot for a cleat, but right about the area where your foot would have been on the back of the pedal, you know, with a clip and strap, it had like little horizontal lines graded in so you could usually find one. Of course, me and my PSN, position sensitivity neuroses, that was in its early days, I'd be riding and be like, wait, is one of my feet like one click forward or back or whatever, but those are the first kind of touring shoes that I remember having those ones, which also as a sidebar, the only time, even though we're jumping forward, I ever forgot my shoes for a bike race was for the Holy Hill road race out at Super Week and left my Maurice's at home. And I got there and I was like, oh man, I don't have shoes, but I had those Lecoq Sportifs in my bag and I threw them on and went out and tried to ride them around. And I was like, there's just no way. So I missed the race. My so one and left, only time. Never forgot left my your shoes again.
You left them at the host house, not back in California.
Correct. We were actually staying in the dorms at whatever the university is there in Milwaukee. Left them in the dorm. Yeah.
Yeah, but let me just let you know that your life is probably longer because you weren't in that race that day.
Dude, holy. Oh, yeah.
Holy hell. That's right. It was so dangerous, man. It was like the first race of the series, and so the fields were huge and very accordion. And I remember sort of you could see the Wisconsin woods to the side of you and hoping that you wouldn't end up in them.
That's right. I do remember that day. There were some huge crashes, and I was back at the, you know, at the start finish area and see the people coming in. You're right. Yeah, that was good.
I think Bosick did have a field day with you forgetting your shoes, if I recall. But
of course, he loved to crack the whip on the juniors if you were at all, anyway, you know, forgot something or did something, especially when you're getting a ride with him.
That was the year of the Cadillac Ranch.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Oh, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
That's an episode in and of itself.
Just the Cadillac Ranch. Have to talk about that one, our pre-85 Nash, post-Super Week, pre-Milwaukee Nationals 85 training camp with horses and cows and trains. Oh, my. It was a spicy one.
Yeah, and like good. Driving to Nationals the night before with two gears in the car and oversleeping our alarm and you with no driver's license driving across Milwaukee to feed us. And thus fixing the car the night before, climbing underneath it and going, oh, this plastic ball goes in here and all of a sudden we got the rest of the gears.
Yeah, exactly. Fixing it on the roadway. Yeah, just James Urbanus' old diesel. James Urbo's old diesel powder blue VW Rabbit was our vehicle of choice. Yeah. All right, we got the bovine coming. So let's talk a little bit more about the bovine, about the schedule, about some of the shakeout rides. What do we got, KS?
Well, you know, we have spoken about it, but here we are, week of. So we're recording on a Tuesday. First shakeout ride is 2 days from now, on Thursday the 23rd. So we're hoping to see some people, some of you out there. We'll be in Paso Robles at the Firestone Walker Tap Room, so just north of Atascadero, the sister city, I guess. It's just the next town up there. Brian Yates and his crew at the Bovine Classic have done a great job at getting these cities to work together. So we will be there. I believe Ed and I will be there. DS, I don't think you won't be able to make it up until that evening.
Correct. I got some dad duties. I got to wrangle down here and then I'll peel out in the evening and head up.
Okay. So we got that going on. Let's see. So yeah, they're saying check-in, please check in at 1:15 that afternoon. So it's an afternoon ride. Every rider does need to sign a waiver. For anyone that's been in the event business, liability waivers, you can get the route. We've seen the routes for the ride because we're going to be ride leaders, but you need to sign in and get the waiver, and then you will get the route, which you can load onto your bicycle computer, handlebar, phone device of choice that will help you with tracking. There's just so many options these days, you know. It used to just be like put it on your Garmin, but it's a little bit different than that. So ride starts at 2:00. Very casual conversation pace. Just, you know, make a new friend. Check it out. Enjoy the weather. They're saying maybe around 2 hours, hour and a half to 2 hours. And then from 4 to 6 p.m., there's a little post-ride and hangout and socializing going on there at Firestone Walker. So, you know, come on out. If you're going to come out and do the ride, come and hang out a little bit afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, it's still great time to hang out. It'll still be early enough in the day that, you know, plenty of time to have an early dinner and do what you're doing. If you get down there, either if you're local or if you're coming in from out of town, like we are, come check it out.
I believe I saw something on there at that Thursday ride at Firestone Walker that your first beer is free if you do the ride. So if you want to get a little post-ride libation, I'm about 99.9% sure I saw that on there. But if you show up thirsty, and it's not the case, you know, I can't say it's 100%, but I'm almost positive. They said your first beer is free if you do the ride. So
yeah, I think that that might be just for the ride guides. I don't know if that's for
everyone. Maybe so.
I might have read that a little different, but in any case, yeah.
See, that's good that we get it squared up. Well, either way, whether you get your first beer free or not, or if you want to come hang out, grab a bite, you know, Firestone has been a long supporter of cycling in the central coast area. If we want to include us in, I mean, all the way back from early road racing in the '80s over in Los Olivos in San Ynez through sponsoring through their 805, beer brand, you know, bike teams and events throughout the years. So if you show up and throw 805 some of your business, that's you know, that's good giving back to a company and a family that's supported cycling in the area for decades and decades.
Well, and a little tie in there is our longtime friend Mike Hecker, who's going to be announcing the Bovine.
That's
he
right.
ran the 805 Criterium in Buellton for a number of years. So
yeah,
it's all tied in together. And you know, Hecker was texting with us earlier this week or the end of last week, and he was threatening to actually do a couple of bike rides and hopefully make these shakeout rides. So maybe we'll have a Hecky sighting as well.
We'll have to see if Hecky can get the big beard out there.
We'll let him ride his e-bike too. We're not hard on e-bikers.
No way. I'm an e-biker.
Especially if you got to ride back into a headwind, they can, you know, push a big hole in there. So
yeah, I was noticing the Thursday ride has quite a climb in it. You know, I got to pace my, I got to get all the way to Saturday.
You got to save it. That's what the easiest gear is for.
Yeah.
Just like me climbing on the hilly stages of Redlands when there was the second stage Criterium that evening, just put it in the easy gear and make your way up the climb.
Yeah.
Save those legs.
All right.
So that's the Thursday ride,
right? That's Thursday,
right?
Yes.
Yes.
That's correct. So Thursday in Paso, Firestone Walker, 1400 Ramada Drive in Paso Robles. But all the info is at the website, thebovineclassic.com. Friday, the 24th of October, there is a ride out of Atascadero, a morning ride. So that schedule is, it's a 10 a.m. meetup. Again, check in, sign waivers. You might want to get there a little earlier. I'm guessing I have not been to the Firestone Walker location, but I'm guessing that the parking is probably a little bit easier there than it is in downtown Atascadero. So give yourselves a little more time. There'll probably be more people on Friday just because we're closer to the weekend. Not everybody can get off on a Thursday to go ride. I did the Friday ride last year, and I feel like there were a couple hundred people.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty decent, you know. So when you get that many people together and everything, you just want to get there a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So 10 a.m. Show up, 11 a.m. rollout. Again, a social ride. We'll be meeting at the Sunken Gardens, Amsterdam Coffee at the Sunken Gardens. If you haven't been to downtown Atascadero, City Hall is back off the main drag, and there's this huge park, the Sunken Gardens. And then there's the road kind of does a big U around the park there. And on one side is Amsterdam Coffee. And I believe that coffee shop was just opening up when we were there last year. So it's cool to see that they're going to kind of be a somewhat of a host with that. It's AMSTRDM, so not spelled completely properly. And that's just off of the Sunken Garden. So you'll see everybody. You get there. There is parking all the way around the gardens there and then on the streets, but just plan a little extra for that.
Yeah. I think that might be somebody starting up the car outside my shop right here if we hear that in the background.
And but, I've got pavers going in, and you can hear tamping in the background as well. So
I haven't heard any tamping, so we're
life
doing
continues.
Good.
Maybe I'm feeling it in my feet because they're right outside of my window with the
tamping
phase that's going on. Yeah.
All right.
So those are the two rides, and then of course there is event day.
Yes.
Right. Three routes. Three bovine-y routes. The three of us will be doing the Happy Bovine. Which is the least challenging of the three, I would say. But that way we can get back for our live cast. But everybody rolls out together, which is pretty cool. And then the routes separate. The Bovine Classic website has all of the info as far as for each route. They have links to the files. So you can go on there and check that out. And if you haven't had an opportunity, and Ed was just filling me on this before we started going, Brian has started to put up some different videos. There's a Bovine Classic YouTube channel. So check that out. You know, about safety or different things that are going on. You know, it's like you can read something, but it's always great to have someone talk, you know, that has done the rides, has designed the routes, has secured the access on the private property. Just check it out. It's super informative, and we can't ever have too much information. Plus, maybe you'd be able to answer a question for someone who doesn't know the answer if you educate yourself. So check all that stuff out. And it's you know, not super early, but it is a 8 a.m. start on Saturday. So, you know, you get there at 6:30 or 7, and that 90 to 60 minutes, it'll disappear just like that. Keep an eye on the weather. It looks to be a little chilly, but no precip. That looks like it's all going to stay north of Atascadero. So it should be a pretty cool day.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Like cool, you know? Good. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Styling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll be set up in the expo area with our studio. So stop by. We might have something for you, or we can at least entertain you, and we'd love to hear your stories and come give us a little content, come record with us, you know, even on the shakeout rides, tell us a story, just come forward and introduce yourself. We're probably the three tallest guys on the ride if you add us all together. So that's how you can figure out who we are.
Well, except I did see that Otis guy is going to be, he's on the start list, and Otis is taller than all of us.
But
big deal. And we will. And it'll be fun to do that. Like Ed was saying, to, you know, I want my SCR.
That's right.
Let's get out there. Yeah. And we'll have a cooler, and we'll have some stuff we'll have there for
people. Drinks, chairs in the studio, so you can come in, take a load off. We're really trying to get people, when you just, you know, we're trying to give people truly the experience of what participating in a gravel event like this is. I mean, I know if you've never been out to one and you watch, you know, you read media coverage, go online and look at, or maybe see some video. A lot of times they're just showing the pointy end of it, you know, the pros, which is really cool. But I've found what's really fun is just like people who are just out riding it. They're not necessarily going, oh, I'm going to hold this many watts or do it in this much time. It's a bit more of an adventure for them to go out and push it in. Just, we really want to tell those stories about those people that are out there. That's a lot of fun, of just people who are maybe new to the sport, and try and give a perspective that tries to tease people into coming out and doing an event, you know, staying involved and doing some live events. There's nothing like it. Get out of your comfort zone a little bit, you know, maybe try a route that's a bit more challenging, or just the nerves of showing up and pinning on a number if you're not used to it, and support, you know, support the event, and that they're out there doing something great with people. We're outside, we're healthy, we're being active, we're doing stuff that's good for fitness. So it's a great all around experience to come and participate in.
Yeah. They have some cool aid stations with some interesting snacks that are actual food, stuff that might make you want to linger a little bit and really enjoy that ride. Yeah. So
nice. We like it.
Good stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
Cuisine. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, that's good.
And that's it. Yeah. And I would say the big thing too is there, I guess I did see that there was some, go on the website about parking on event day. I think there's still some construction going on around there. So just be aware of that. And you know, it's only on you if you show up surprised because you didn't inform yourself on what's going on.
But right.
Be prepared.
So we were looking through the start list a little bit earlier, and we're up there up to what, 580, was it? 90?
Yeah, 586, I think, is what we're at. It's an entertaining list. This is a very low-key event. You know,
right.
We have the Filthy 50 down in San Diego, so a lot of the, you know, fancy pros will be down that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, entertaining list, you got Olympians, you got, you know, mountain bike Hall of Famers, And right. You got Chaos, who's a 1990 U.S. Pro Champion. You got some classic names in here of people who look to mostly ride for fun, is what I yeah. what I see when I look at this list.
Yeah, definitely yeah. people from all over California. One I saw from Colorado in there. We got some friends of mine coming up from Santa Barbara, which will be pretty fun. Like you mentioned, Otis Guy is registered. Clark Natwick, former multi-time cyclocross champion. So it'll be pretty neat to see some different people out there.
Yeah. We just went to 587. I hit refresh. So people are seeing how nice the weather's going to be and going. Yeah. So there was actually a little gravel ride in Nevada City this past weekend that I announced. And I just see that Melanie Wong is on the start list and she won the ride here this past weekend. So all right. Racer for Butcher Box. Who else? Jen Tave, who has won some of the Grasshoppers. As we scroll through here, you never know who you might see, huh?
That's right. You never know what other people are on the list.
And we were talking about like Atascadero, true to Central California, well, it's not on the coast, but Central Coast. It looks like a great mix of people from up north where I am and you know, down south, you know, Central and Southern California as well. It's a very cool mix. I mean, it's heavy if you can go by, you know, the people their hometown as they come up here, but heavy California, but a good mix of north and south. So
I just spotted number 296, Armin Rahm. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He had ice bikes. He raced road bikes. He made that ice bicycle brand. I remember Jim White got one of those for a team that he was on. He's a fabricator and, you know, he's always interesting to talk to.
Yeah.
So, yep, he's on there. I'm sure there's plenty of other ones that were zinging right by, but it should be pretty cool. Yeah. We'll see different people out there.
The whole Fairfax Mafia will be down at the Bovine. That's all. There's a whole crew of people I ride with. Actually, they're not the Fairfax Mafia. They're the Fairfax Grafia. Because they're the Gravel Mafia. Yeah. Ray Arada is the... Ray Arada, the man formerly known as Big Daddy, now known as Slim Daddy, since he, you know, lost weight and enjoyed riding there anymore. So there's a whole crew of people coming from Marin County as well.
Nice,
yeah.
That's going to be good.
Yeah. So it should be good. What else? You know, that's it on Bovine. I think. Is there anything else that we're missing on that, you guys?
As far as the event, I think we're pretty good. We were gonna bring a little Blinded by Science that's going to get tested out this weekend at the Bovine.
Yes.
So if you refresh me, Ed, was it episode 6? You were telling me 7-ish in there where we were talking about this new Shimano cleat that came out, the CLMT-001, but it's the one that has the ground down nose that lets you have multi ways to enter, not just toe in now. And so Ed put in a request for a new set of, we'll check out these freshies that he just got. Fresh set of Esfire gravel shoes just showed up today. I ordered them up for him. So he's going to put these on and put the new cleats on there and check them out, see how they do. So it'll be interesting. We'll have to give a little tech report. We ordered a couple of sets, so I'm going to try them out and put them on my shoes as well so we can see what the new cleats are all about and have some first-hand scoop for all of you.
Yeah, supposedly you can stomp straight down on the pedal now and it'll engage. That'll be interesting to see.
Right. I would imagine it would just provide a teeny bit of mud clearance too.
Yeah.
If you think about relieving a little bit of material up off the front of it, I'm sure as it goes down to engage, it just creates a little bit of space so it won't pack up.
Yeah.
But and then we'll see what are you guys what tires as of right now are you thinking you're going to show up on? What's your starting game plan?
I guess I'll go first. I'm bringing two bikes. I might ride my Epic 8 XCO bike with flight attendant on it because that's the only bike I've ridden since April. I've ridden my gravel bike once this last summer April. But I will bring my gravel bike. I think I'm going to leave my road bike behind. I was going to do some pre-riding tomorrow along the coast before they open the highway. I want to ride south.
Oh, yeah.
It was always on my list to ride south of the slide before they open the road in March. So
Right.
I might try and do a little of that tomorrow, but I was like, oh, I guess I could ride my gravel bike.
Yeah.
So right now there's Pathfinder 45s on there. I noticed that on the website it says that tire will work for the Happy Bovine. They call that tire out. So
all right.
Not really looking forward to changing my tires. I do have a Thunderbird 2.1 that belongs on the front of that bike if it was a little rockier and chunkier, but I don't feel like changing tires, so probably not
gonna. Right.
And I'm not sure which bike I'll ride, but maybe some bikes ride one on the shakeout ride and just change right. it up. Not too worried about it.
Yeah. What about you, KS?
I've got some 700x45 WTB Riddlers on a set of wheels. Actually, just mounted them up. I had one that really wore out, and so I was like, I knew I had another one in a box, and I just put those on before we got on here. So I've got those set up, and if I get around, I might mount another set of tires up and another set of wheels. I was hoping to get a new set of wheels built up, but you know, life happens. So I didn't get that. So those are the tires I've got for now.
Those are the ones you've got on there.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for some other tires to show up. Gonna try out some different ones, and so when I get those, we'll talk about it at that point. But I'll probably bring a backup set of wheels just because then I won't need them if I bring them. Right.
That's exactly it. Guarantee it. Well, I'm going to show up on 2.0s, I think, set of Gravel King SKs. So I'll probably just stick with that because I'm just comfortable riding the 2.0s and I've been on there and they seem to really match. I know that Arid is rated, you know, it can use 50s. So obviously, you know, like a 45 or 50, but I've been so comfortable riding the 50s. And also, as you guys said, not having to switch tires, the 50s are already on there. So that makes it a pretty easy choice. When they were threatening rain, I was like, oh boy, if it's really muddy, I have this one set of prototype Panracer mud tires that they never produced, but I held on to my one set that I figure at some point there's going to be that one event where we're really going to need them. But luckily, it doesn't look like it's going to be this weekend. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah,
but I'm sticking with the 50s. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and that's it. I think we'll stick with our pre-Bovine and a little, we didn't stray off too bad on that. And then hit some of our new stuff in the coming episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be putting up, we'll be sending out content, you know, after the shakeout rides and obviously on the day of the event. So keep your eyes tuned for any new drops from the service course report. Get you some new info. Yeah.
If you're there in person, step forward and give us feedback on the podcast or give us some content. We'd love to interview you right on the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we hope to see you there. And if we don't see you live, then hopefully you'll see us what we put up.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Great.
See you.